Terrified, Pippin lay still, though the pain at his wrists and ankles was growing, and the stones beneath him were boring into his back. To take his mind off himself, he listened intently to all that he could hear. There were many voices round about, and though orc speech sounded at all times full of hate and anger, it seemed plain that something like a quarrel had begun and was getting hotter. Welcome to a sacred fellowship where we are reading the works of J.R.R. Tolkien using sacred reading practices. We are using these texts to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions. We believe that through treating classics like The Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Lorian. It is very nice to see you today. This is episode 48, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorian Schwenk, will be discussing the third chapter in The Treason of Isengard, the Uruk-hai, through the theme of hope. Lie down on the ground, don't mind the stones pressing on your organs, or settle in your car seat and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred, and we're glad you're here to continue building community with us.
So it is good to be together again, and thank you all for joining us. And it is time, of course, to catch up. And I hope you don't have any dungeon as bad as what Merry and Pippin are going through. How are you, Catherine?
Oh, well, I know at least two people in our listener community share my faith. And so we just came off of General Conference, which is every 6 months, and it's where the leadership of our church speak to the church worldwide. And anyone following me on Facebook will know that I quoted everything and everywhere and really enjoyed it. So that's my tower, is that I have been fed so well this weekend with the good word of God and have many resolutions to put down on my whiteboard for the week.
Fantastic.
And my dungeon is probably that I am waiting very, very anxiously for a delivery on Wednesday because I am almost out of a medication and I'm needing it. And this is for my migraines. As you guys all very well know, I have chronic ones and I've had a particularly bad one this weekend. How about you?
Oh, terrible. Dungeon. Oh, I had a little bouncy incident with my bank. And I was watching and watching and watching, and I got to Friday night and thought everything was fine and thought I would be fine till Monday morning. Well, it turns out that things that happened Friday didn't get posted till this morning, and therefore I was overdrawn. And I'm a little testy about that. And they're trying to do right by me, but I won't know for a while. So I'm a little ticked off about that. It is all back to the black for now, but I really do try to manage my money better than that, and I hate that it ended up getting overdrawn. So that's the positive. Is funny enough money related as well. I got my absolutely beautiful No I'm Never Going to Mark in Silmarillion a week or so ago, but now I am waiting and it's on its way, the copy that I will mark up, and I'm really looking forward. I was going to wait to start reading it until we were done, and I realize now I kind of need to start. I need the depth. So yeah. I'm going to add that to my pile of things. So once I get this copy, and it will also have the Ted Naismith art. I'm really tired. My grasp of the English language is going to be very interesting this time, but it will be.
Do you need to use some of the black speech? Because we have that in the chapter too.
I'm not sure I'm up for that. So at any rate, I am looking forward to getting that. And I'm also getting the Hammond and Skull companion and guide. So I appreciate that. And then kind of overall, somebody had posted elsewhere, and then I put it in our group on Facebook. Someone has made a calendar for everything. And so I am eager to print that out and then mark that in chapters as I'm reading so that I know that, say, this chapter, the Uruk-hai, no black speech for me, takes place over, well, chapters 3 and 4 of The Treason of Isengard take place over February 26th through March 2nd. So, so I am pleased that I don't have to do that work and very grateful that someone else has done that. So that's way too many towers, but I'm excited. So
it's okay. You can never have too many towers.
Right. And I also enjoyed all your postings over the weekend. I read them and thought about them and I appreciated them. Mm-hmm. Do you have a story for us about hope?
I do, and I'm going to give a little bit of trigger warning because this is going to be in a very dark place for a little bit, but then I'm going to reassure you by in saying that you all know that I came out all right in the end. And so this is the story of the end of January and the beginning of February 2005. And I was in an abusive relationship, and on the Friday at the end of January, my dad talked to my ex and he got the impression that things were not all well and that I was in some kind of danger. And he called me and offered to give me a plane ticket to just get out for a few days and figure out what I needed to do, see if it would help things. And my sister decided to call and kind of encourage me to take that offer as well. What happened between those two phone calls is that this particular ex tried to choke me to death for trying to leave the house for a church event. And I realized that he was not going to stop trying to kill me. And I was utterly unsure if I would ever be able to escape from it. And on Monday, right after my sister called me to say, you really need to take this plane ticket. I'll put you up in my house. We'll just take care of you for a little while and you'll be okay. I came out of a choir rehearsal at my college, and one of my oldest friends from that time, who actually happened to be a friend with my ex as well, ran into me on the bus, and I told her what had been going on, and she decided to basically kidnap me for a night, convince me to do what my dad and my sister were urging me to do. And then by the end of that week, I had gotten the plane ticket. I had packed up. I had told my ex this lie that I was going to be visiting my sister for a few days in Virginia, and I would try to be back by Valentine's Day. And at that point, I really thought I would be back by Valentine's Day, which would be in another 6 days. And in the week that followed, I literally realized that if I ever came back, I wouldn't survive it. So I decided that I had to stay a little longer, and I had to take matters into my own hands. And I asked my dad to get me a lawyer to get me out and to make me safe. And obviously, like I said, I came out right at the end of this. It's been 16 years since then, but if it hadn't been for this confluence of events where all these people were being nosy and all these people were being well-intentioned at the last moment that I wanted them to be, if I had not actually put my trust in the idea that it could be helped, I would not be here today. So anyway, that's my story on hope, is this idea that things can be salvaged.
Well, I also hear you use the word trust, and that is actually the earliest meaning. Mm-hmm. Now the gammers are getting a little word in early here.
Yes, please do.
That now there is this sense of from the 13th century on. So the new meaning is to wish for something and to yearn for it or desire it. But prior to the early 13th century, it was to trust and to have confidence. And it is from English and German origins. And it would especially have been a theological kind of hope for salvation, for redemption, for rescue, for, you know, for new life. So that is exactly a story on hope. So I think the gammers will continue, if that's all right.
Yes, go ahead.
We will do that because we have a lot of words in the next chapter. So I just have one more in this and then a special one. In last chapter, we got league, and that was fun. In this chapter, we get furlong. Mm-hmm. And the gammers say that that is 660 feet. And is 1/8 of a mile, and is the length of a furrow in a common field. So there we are. So furrow to furlong. So we have instances of however many furlongs people have run, and now we know what a furlong is. And I thought this time I would look up peregrine. because this is not one of those words that comes from Northern Europe. It is not English or Norse or Germanic. This comes from the Latin and then to the French, specifically in description of a falcon, and we still have peregrine falcons around. The French would have been pèlerin, but the Latin would have had the G, peregrinus. And it is interesting because it has the same root as agriculture. The agri part is agriculture, and per means far. So it means far afield.
Literally,
so,
yes.
So a peregrination is a pilgrimage, and a peregrine is someone who is on pilgrimage. So that's the person who is on pilgrimage as a peregrine. And I think that's an interesting choice of a name for peregrine took. And I love that. So I'm glad that the Gammers wanted to share that.
Well, one of the things I always find fascinating is that Gandalf and Peregrine Took always seem to be at loggerheads with each other and seem to be at cross purposes at times. Yet they call Gandalf the Grey Pilgrim or the Grey Wanderer a lot. So he himself is a peregrine.
And sometimes you criticize in someone else what you actually find fault in yourself. Mm-hmm. So perhaps Gandalf, that was part of his arc of being a bit of a fool, or perhaps he's called a fool still. I don't know. So are we ready to discuss the chapter and where we found hope in the chapter?
Are we ever ready to discuss the Uruk-hai? Because those guys are just nasty.
I even meant to talk to you a little bit beforehand. This is brutal. And I wonder, you know, content warning, you can skip this episode if you don't like torture and bondage. This was hard. This was a hard read. And to read it so deeply and carefully. But what was delightful was how much hope there was to be found in it. And actually, I titled our Zoom meeting, Foolish Hope. Because I found so much hope in Pippin all throughout. And he's such a fool for finding any hope at all. But that's the exact kind of fool you need to be sometimes in some situations.
Mm-hmm.
And so where did you first find hope?
Oh, for me, it was the third paragraph. It says, slowly in Pippin's aching head, memory pieced itself together and became separated from dream shadows. Of course, he and Mary had run off into the woods. What had come over them? Why had they dashed off like that, taking no notice of old Strider? They had run a long way, shouting. He could not remember how far or how long. And then suddenly they had crashed right into a group of orcs. They were standing listening, and they did not appear to see Mary and Pippin until they were almost in their arms. Then they yelled, and dozens of other goblins had sprung out of the trees. Mary and he had drawn their swords, but the orcs did not wish to fight and had tried to lay hold of them. And even when Mary had cut off several of their arms and hands, good old Mary, then Boromir had come leaping through the trees. He had made them fight. And so I find this both a memory of the hope that they had had in trying to avoid the conflict or in trying to search for help, because he really doesn't remember having a conscious decision made to get involved. But there seems to be something where he put his hope in the idea that he would be able to find refuge or find help in the fellowship, but he blames himself for not being able to find it or having made foolish decisions, I think.
That's a good one. I just wanted to point out earlier his troubled dream. It opens mm-hmm. with his troubled dream. And it reminds me of his dream in the Barrow-wights.
Barrow-wight.
And it's interesting. He is a dreamer and he has meaningful dreams, I think. I love that. And then I think that the end of that, when he's kind of blaming himself, and I wish Gandalf had never persuaded Elrond to let us come. What good have we been? Just a nuisance, a passenger, a piece of luggage. Now he says, I hope Strider or someone will come and claim us, but ought I to hope for it? And I just love him so there, because he hopes to be rescued, but he also wonders if it's a waste of time to come after them. Because the important part is the ring and Frodo.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lovely sense of the larger story there. that he is able to hope for rescue, but also to hope that the plans can stay in put and just let us go if that's what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then he calls himself a fool. Oh, no, he's called a fool. I'm sorry. Rest while you can, little fool, because he struggles for a while. And the orc says that to him. So I thought, oh, they know him well.
or perhaps they have as much snap judgment in his actions as some great pilgrims often have.
Right, right.
Not to say that Gandalf's an orc, but, you know, we all make mistakes of judgment at times.
Yes, we do. And I think that that passage that I read at the beginning, to take his mind off himself, is a huge act of hope. How do you do that when you are bound and have rocks pressing into you and you can't move and really don't know a whole lot? But he's able to channel his mind to do something else and take his mind off himself. So I found that to be a great act of hope. And I find it helpful also that he can understand what they're saying. It's a little bit of something in their favor that the orcs have to speak to one another in the common language. And so he finds a little bit of hope in that. How about you? What's next?
I agree with you on that. At first, when I first read this, I was thinking, okay, is this gift of tongues, gift of interpretation of tongues? Is this some divine thing? And it's no, they really have to find common ground. And luckily for the hobbits, it's one that they share with them in this unlikely scenario. But for me, I find a lot of hope in the conflict that they have stumbled into with the orcs and the Rokai, and the enmity that's been there that has nothing to do with them, really.
Right.
But it's something that, thank goodness, there was this innate struggle between the two parties. And so many loud yells and orc speech answered him. This is when... One of the orcs says, swine, is it? How do you folk like being called swine by the muckrakers of a dirty little wizard? It's orc flesh they eat, I'll warrant. And so many loud yells and orc speech answered him, and the ringing clash of weapons being drawn. Cautiously, Pippin rolled over, hoping to see what would happen. His guards had gone in to join in the fray. And so that's really where I found that next. But later we have put up your weapons, shouted Ugluk, and let's have no more nonsense. We go straight west from here and down the stair. From there, straight to the downs, then along the river to the forest. And we march day and night. That clear? Now, thought Pippin, if only it takes that ugly fellow a little while to get his troop under control, I've got a chance.
And it even says a gleam of hope had come to him.
Yes.
Right. So I wanted to point out a few other instances of hope just within all of that passage. First of all, they hear, or Pippin hears, because we're really in his point of view, that there's no time to kill them, and also that the orders include not to kill them. So, okay. So they get that they are not going to be dinner. And I thought... I had to put myself in the shoes of the bad guys every now and then. They're hoping for pay and praise, it says, you know, and you'll fly off with our prisoners and get all the pay and praise. This is, I'm not sure who this voice is, because there's this evil voice and I'm not quite sure who that is quite yet. And there's a quiet voice, softer than the others, but more evil. And I'm not sure if that's Grishnak or who it is.
Tolkien could do with a few more pronouns and helpful and names.
Right. And it may not matter entirely, but, and then there's even some hope because Grishnak disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So the, I even have to look at my notes here. Ugluk, Uruk-hai, Saruman, Grishnak, Orc, Sauron. Okay, so we have one great pain in the tuchus gone, which is a little bit of hope for the time being, at least. And I don't know why he leaves, but he has slipped away. So in that passage, there is a little bit of hope. And this is the moment. Pippin is able to cut the cords on his wrist and then retie them to be a loose bracelet. He's just enough time. So What was next for you?
For me, it might be skipping ahead a little bit, but it's really just a wonderful moment for me. Pippin has just had the orc draft, and so has Merry, and he said when he had forced a drink from his flask, this being one of the orcs, down the hobbit's throat, he pulled his legs bound and so dragged him to his feet. Merry stood up, looking pale but grim and defiant and very much alive. The gash in his forehead gave him no trouble, but he bore a brown scar to the end of his days. "Hello, Pippin," he said. "So you come along on this little expedition, too? Where do we get bed and breakfast?" Oh, and
I love that
quote. I find that there are people in my life who literally they can be the ones standing there in distress, but they will find a way to succor other people and to bring some kind of hope or some kind of normalcy to a situation so that it kind of regrounds everyone in their presence. And I think that this is one of Merry's greatest contributions, is that he knows a time and a place for this sort of need.
Right, right. I love that. And I think even before then, it's just a sign of hope that they get their legs freed.
No kidding.
They have to run and be whipped, but for the moment, their legs are freed. And shortly after that, they're going down this narrow ravine. At the bottom, they stepped onto grass, and the hearts of the hobbits rose.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was beautiful. They find this glimmer of hope just on being on this beautiful grass. They still have to run. And then it is very interesting, a little farther down, there comes into Pippin's mind, unbidden, a vision of the keen face of Strider bending over a dark trail and running behind. So somehow or other, he is connected or receiving. He doesn't need a palantir. And he is connected somehow to Strider, a Strider to him. And he is aware that they are being followed. Help us on the way.
Now, I'm curious, this is just a kind of question, but do you think this vision is something that's given to him, or do you think this is Pippin expressing kind of hope in his imagination that there is someone coming for them?
No, I think it is given to him. I really do. I think somehow or other Strider is somehow or other somehow able to broadcast.
It kind of reminds me of both Bilbo and Frodo and them having almost prescient or clairvoyant impressions of things as they are in the wider world, and these are often connected with their possession of the ring. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, Pippin and Merry are definitely being safeguarded by higher powers, mm-hmm, that are in opposition to the ring and everything that Sauron stands for. And so I feel like this is quite possibly a message from that, or by the power, mm-hmm, of that.
Yes, yes. I mean, Pippin is part of the Fellowship of the Ring. And, mm-hmm, so maybe there is, in a way, some of that protection. But we have seen Pippin having dreams, Pippin seeing things. He has some gift in him, I think, already.
Well, it reminds me way, 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 way back when we read chapter one of The Hobbit, that there was a rumor that one of the Tooks had taken a fairy wife. And so this entire line that Pippin is heir to in the connection with the Baggins is that there is a connection to the supernatural or to the unusual. And so I think it's very in character that Pippin is the one to have these abilities.
Right, right. And then a little farther down, he knows there's no hope of escape, but there's a hope that I have left some of my own marks unspoiled on this wet ground. And so this is when he runs away and drops his brooch.
Mm-hmm.
And we know already, because of interlacement, yes, I'm reading Tom Shippey, that Strider has found that brooch. I mean, Pippin, yes, even says, it may lie here until the end of time. I don't know why I did it. If the others have escaped, they've probably all gone with Frodo. So his logical mind doesn't have the hope, but there is some part of his spirit that wanted to do this anyway, just on the chance. And it was worth getting whipped again and then having to be back into this forced march. There is a moment there where he's in evil dreams and lay for a while fighting with despair. So that's where I found it hopeless.
On the other hand, I find it, I don't know, if this is probably just to kind of interposing my own personality into this situation, but if I were in this with the whippings and the forced march and all of the torment that they're enduring, I would be thinking constantly about escape. And obviously they are trying to find a way to free themselves from this. But on the other hand, it says that his head swam, but from the heat in his body, he guessed that he had been given another draft. It feels as though they are recognizing that while they are passing through this, they are being strengthened by what they're given. And so there is a little bit of self-preservation or self-care in making sure that they are not rushing out as vulnerable as they can be, but they can find ways to understand the situation better, and they can find ways to take advantage of the quote-unquote hospitality of the Ur-Hai.
Well, and it also made me think somebody made this medication, and I am imagining that there are female orcs and female Ur-Hai, and that they would probably be in charge of that task, and that there is a hope when you make a medication. So there is hope of healing, and you don't necessarily know who's going to receive it. And in this case, it's Merry and Pippin and probably other orcs and Ur-Hai for their own wounds on this run and in this event. So I'm not trying to be too big hearted towards them, but I have my own little headcanon now of the females of these species who brew this medication, and it is so effective. It's not pleasant, but it works.
It reminds me of the fact that the orcs are originally a corruption of the elves. And so we know from repeated interactions with the elves that they have these substances and they have these drinks or foods that are able to nourish and able to strengthen. And I'm almost in my own headcanon, it is slightly tied to yours, in which I'm thinking of a person who in their life as an elf before the time that they were an orc were able to give that kind of strength, that the only thing that they really retain in terms of their character from those days is this almost potioneering nature that they are able to employ. And it's not something that is ever going to be pleasant for them, but it is something that is still true to their former self. Right. And again, this is completely speculation, but
we get to do that.
We don't know why they have this medicinal draft, other than, well, even an evil army needs some kind of help.
This is what sacred reading is, and we get to do this. So there you go. I am curious about the dark smudge of forest lay on the lower slopes before them. And I'm wondering, is this Fangorn already, or is this some other forest?
If I'm not mistaken, it should be Fangorn, because if I'm looking at the map correctly, they are bordering Fangorn on their way to Isengard, because it will be both to their west and to their north at different points in this passage through what is essentially the Gap of Rohan. And we know that that is where the Three Hunters are as well. And so Fangorn will be almost encroaching on them at this point.
And then it is interesting that there's the forest, get to it, it's your best hope, is Ugluk saying that. And so I'm wondering why they want to go into the forest. I mean, I realize they're trying to get away from the horse riders, but what do you think they call the white skins, but the cavalry are coming. Why do you think that the forest is their best hope?
Well, the forest is something that is a dangerous place to many different types of creatures if they have both lack of knowledge of it and a lack of good intentions towards their place there. And so I feel like they are thinking, if it is an enemy, it might also be the enemy of those who chase us.
And we see that some of the northern orcs break away and dash off. I think they're also frightened of daylight, so they don't want to be out in the day. And so the hobbits were left just with the Isengarders, just with the Uruk-hai. And so, yeah, this is, you feel the tension getting tight, you know, they mm-hmm. are in this race against time, and these horsemen coming. And I just found the description of the night really eerie, the riders having their fires, but they are not close enough that you can shoot an arrow towards it, but they've gotten mm-hmm. hemmed in. And I found a great deal of hope in the riders catching up. And then pinning this little group of runners here, not so mm-hmm. little group of runners. these are not easy chapters for me when it's mostly about landscape and all of that. So I've really done a lot of work. So if I'm getting it wrong, correct me.
No, you're doing great.
Right. And I love the little bit that all he could remember about Rohan was that Gandalf's horse had come from there. So Pippin mm-hmm. was like, okay, that's hopeful, knowing that these horsemen are coming. So hopefully it is not not yet another enemy to us. So mm-hmm. am I missing hope in here, or where did you next find it?
No, that's where I had it next mm-hmm. it noted in the meantime. But for me, it is really best expressed in one of my favorite parts of the entire series, in which Pippin realizes that they are hoping, or they are under the impression that he or Mary have possession of this great weapon for the war. And he plays upon that and pretends to have been enthralled by the ring. And it's both an act of hope in what it is as a, I wouldn't say deterrent, but it is something that even the orcs fear to encounter, because it's something that they do not understand. It is something that is tied to a master that they have reason to fear and to respect. And so the idea that they are people in possession of something dangerous in their proximity and something that they cannot reckon with is a wonderful moment for me. But I just absolutely love the idea that, yes, we are going to fight back and we are going to use the weapon that you hope we don't have to do so.
And we're going to make you wish that we don't have it. It is just brilliant. And I just admire the whole passage of him realizing that there's something wrong. And all of that. And then we see Grishnak actually hoping to find it because he grabs them both and runs off with them. So there's a little bit of his hope that he's going to have the prize for his mm-hmm. master. And and then a horse snorted and reared. And I love the end of Grishnak.
Yes.
And I love also the hidden bit of hope. I think Mary and Pippin have forgotten that they're in the elf robes. They are essentially invisible here.
Yes.
And so they are, they're free. Grishna took them away from everybody else. And then mm-hmm. he gets sent to a farm upstate. Yay!
Oh my gosh, I have read this so many times and have never thought of it that way.
you shouldn't, but
oh, but it's so awesome to just I apologize to pet owners everywhere who will be like, don't joke about that, I missed every pet I've had to send to a farm upstate.
Right.
Yes.
Well, then they're free, they get away, and they crawl for a while. They still have a little bit of Lembas, and they eat a little bit, and that brings back a little bit of hope to them. And as I say, they crawl along the way, and then they're walking and comparing notes. They're just having a pleasant conversation. They know what they need to do right now. Isn't that just so sweet and so tender?
It's so lovely that they have this ease in the aftermath of things, that they are able to do this. It's like personally, even if I had just seen myself rescued by the Riders of Rohan and to have escaped from Grishnok, I would be legging it, to borrow the phrase from the British. But they're just like, okay, we have a moment where we can take a pause and take in some peace. Let's take advantage of that. And that it definitely is reflected in their choice to have some of the Lembas as well.
And Mary compliments Master Took and says, you've done well, and you'll get a chapter in old Bilbo's book if I ever get a chance to report it. I love that. And then,
breaking the fourth wall a little bit.
A little bit. And then he says, Cousin Brandy Buck is going in front now. I'm the one who studied the maps. I know where I am. We're going to head towards the forest. And I don't know much about this forest, but the forest seems better to me all the same than turning back into the middle of a battle. So I just appreciate that. That's almost funny. And like, duh. And yes, that is better. Go towards the forest. And it is just a sweet little line here. Little furtive figures in the dim light looked like elf children in the deeps of time, peering out of the wild wood in wonder at their first dawn. Oh, that's lovely. That is really lovely. And yes. I wonder if there is hope in the very last paragraph, because it says no news of this great fire came back either to Mordor or to Isengard, but the smoke of the burning rose high to heaven and was seen by many watchful eyes. Mm-hmm. Who's watching?
I think it's people on both sides of the war, those who are hoping that if they see a fire, it is one against their enemies, and people who are watching from the side of goodness or from the side of opposition to everything that Mordor stands for, which is also a land of ashes and fires and that sort of thing. And so they are looking for a almost salvation in those fires, that it is a sign that something has been defeated.
So somebody's feeling some hope at this sign. I wonder... Yes. What the conscious beings in the forest feel when they see fire. And so I'm just thinking of that as we look forward towards the next chapter, because go on. Yes,
I'm also remembering the previous chapter with the Riders of Rohan, where we have the trees in Fangorn Forest, and one of them is so welcoming of fire that it bends its branches towards the one that Gimli kindles. And this is a very different kind of fire. And so when you're talking about the conscious beings in Fangorn, my first thought is, yes, what do the trees think?
Yes, right. So they're still behind, right? Mm-hmm. They're still behind it. But they will see it moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. What do the three think? Yes, indeed. Was there anything else we missed on the theme?
There was one in a paragraph, two ones before that. It says, we have watched too long, said Mary. There's a Gluk. I don't want to meet him again. The hobbits turned and fled deep into the shadows of the wood. And this is the third instance in which we see members of the fellowship making a deliberate move in a certain direction. We have Sam and Frodo shouldering their burdens and moving into the lands of shadows. We have the three hunters deliberately heading towards Rohan, etc. And then we have Merry and Pippin, who have been so completely powerless in this chapter, fleeing into the woods, which seems like an act of cowardice, but no, this is an act of escape that they have been working for this entire time.
Right. And so patiently. Oh. In fact, that Pippin's almost able to tell Merry about his hands, and then they get interrupted, and it's a day or so before he can finally tell him his hands are free, and then frees him. It's just amazing. So poor little guys. And if I always change the cover for the Facebook page for whatever chapter, and I didn't want something violent, and I really struggled to find a picture. It was a hard look to find something. So Are we ready to step into our sacred practice now?
Oh, I love that we're ready for that.
All right. So I will read it first. And after I read it, would you mind, or I can, giving the context for it? So I just have two short sentences, and I referred to it earlier, but this is where I want to take us. Are you ready?
Yes.
All that he could remember about Rohan was that Gandalf's horse, Shadowfax, had come from that land. That sounded hopeful as far as it went. So first, can you tell us the context for that?
This is Pippin's point of view as he is the narrator for this chapter, and he is recognizing a little bit of where they are in terms of the wider context of Middle Earth. And so he's trying to really imagine if there are any places that he knows their situation, since they are very much on the move and not able to establish themselves very easily.
Right. And there's also the extra piece that the riders have become level with the orcs galloping
over
the plains. So he is finding a little bit of hope here in that. I will read it one more time. And this time, let me know if there's a word that jumps out at you or a phrase. All that he could remember about Rohan was that Gandalf's horse, Shadowfax, had come from that land. That sounded hopeful as far as it went.
For me, the phrase that stuck out was as far as it went. And it reminds me of one of those wonderful sermons that I've heard over the years when they talk about riding into the darkness on a bicycle with a little headlight on the front, and it only gives a few yards of illumination, but you have to trust that it will keep on illuminating the path that you need to take. And so as far as it went reminds me of trusting that there will be more once you have reached the end of it.
And for me, it was all that he could remember. And it's somewhat similar, but thinking that sometimes you're in a position where you can't get more information.
Yes.
So you just have to work with exactly what you have. Now, you were reminded of something outside of the text, so I'm going to share something. I just always think of these moments in Doctor Who that look so hopeless, absolutely hopeless. And then at some point, the doctor says, okay, what do we have? What have we got?
Yeah.
Out of that, the doctor is able to assemble some kind of escape, rescue, whatever. And I love that. So Pippin remembering something about horses is where, you know, is kind of that moment for me. Mm-hmm. Can you think of places elsewhere in the Legendarium where your phrase would resonate as far as it went?
It actually reminds me of Bilbo standing in the passage on the way into the Lonely Mountain, where he can see the glare of the dragon in the distance, and it's really the only light that he has, but he is able to find his direction based on something that just removes a little bit of the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Then that reminds me of Bilbo actually remembering to use the map.
Mm-hmm.
So all that he could remember. So we're in kind of that same spot that, you know, the dwarves are in despair. They think there's no hope. They're never going to find the door. And Bilbo is the one who remembers the map. So you, even in despair and in hard moments, remember there is something. Remember something. I think that's what that's talking about. So would you read it to us? And this time, let's think, how is this passage speaking to us?
All that he could remember about Rohan was that Gandalf's horse, Shadowfax, had come from that land. That sounded hopeful as far as it went.
I think I'll just go with the same theme that sometimes I don't have everything I think I need, but I have all that I can remember, or whatever I actually have. I have whatever, and that will be what I need at this time.
I feel like it calls me to look at any situation with a mind towards the inventory. What you were talking about with Doctor Who, it brings to mind many, many moments of the Matt Smith era in which he delighted in inventorying things that he seems to have that were not helpful, but culminated in something fantastic. And so when we are in darkness, we have to take stock of what we have that it can be of benefit to us.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you. I love Lectio. Next week, we move back into Havruta. So mm-hmm. I can't wait. And you get to pick the first passage. So looking forward to that. Do you have any exhortations for characters in the chapter?
I know we haven't spoken a great deal about him, but I feel like I need to exhort Mary that never stop having this innate ability to succor other people, because it is going to get everyone who you are in contact with through certain difficult times. And I have confidence that we'll be able to see that in the coming chapters.
Yes. Very nice.
How about you?
I think just because of the interlacements, even though we know what happens with the three, I just feel called back to them to continue to have their own hope that they will find what they need. And especially Aragorn, because he doubted so much his decision, but then once he made it, he was committed to it. So I want to bolster him in that decision that you've gone the right direction. Something's gonna happen. All right. So next week we'll be discussing chapter 4, Treason of Isengard, Treebeard, through the theme of trust. Can't wait. And tell us a little bit, remind us about how to get in touch, how people can get in touch with us, please.
That is a very good thing to bring up, because I was just reviewing some of our information on the Podomatic site where we host everything this morning at around 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was reminded that we have our Twitter handle, which is asacredfellows1. We are on Instagram and Facebook at asacredfellowship. We have our email address where you can send notes from the Shire, sternly worded letters, letters of acclamation, whatever you like. asacredfellowship@gmail.com. And of course, we are able to be contacted on our website, www.asacredfellowship.com.
Yes, and please now, read Second Breakfast.
Yes, once I post it this week. Oh,
you like can I read said, past I've been postings having... as well. People can read past postings and comment. We love your comments.
Yes, we really do. And speaking of comments, we are coming up. We have 2 episodes left before we hit number 50, which is kind of astonishing to me. I really, you know, I had a faith that this would go well, but I kept on thinking, no, we're just going to discover we're tired of each other by about episode 20. And thank goodness that we're able to get this far, and we're so happy to be reaching it with you. So we're going to have another drawing. This time it will actually be for something that I have found off of Amazon that is Tolkien related, but it is not a book, so you have a little bit of mystery. Uh-huh. And so if you want to join in that drawing, please continue to leave comments. We have had some really fascinating ones coming in from our recent episodes as people have been catching up. And I have to say that, like I said, when I go on podomatic.com, I love looking at our stats, and that not only tells me where we stand in the listings, but it tells me that we have friends signing in from places as far-flung as Russia, as Norway, Sweden. We have people in the United States. We have some in Canada, in France, etc. So we always love to hear from you, and we always love looking at the map of where we're reaching.
Absolutely. All right. And do you have a note from the Shire to close this down?
Well, this is a little bit reading my own mailbox, because we talked earlier about pilgrimages. And it reminded me that back in 2019, I was asked to speak at the end of my missionary service when I was a hosting missionary in Salt Lake City. And I worked at 2 buildings at the church headquarters, and a lot of people would ask me questions, and I have this passage from the talk I gave on the matter. Several weeks before I finished, a woman approached me at the temple gate, and I politely asked if this was a pilgrimage site like Mecca or the Vatican that every member should visit in their life. It is on this note that I'd like to tie together some lessons learned about gospel study from my hosting mission. I recently came across a comment from Pope Benedict XVI on the subject of pilgrimages. To go on a pilgrimage is not to simply visit a place to admire its treasures of nature, art, or history. To go on a pilgrimage really means to step out of ourselves in order to encounter the divine where he has revealed himself, where his grace has shone with particular splendor and produced rich fruits of conversion and holiness among those who believe. To quote another resource, we should consider the following at the end of each day. How have we been refreshed today by the presence and power of the divine? What did we see today that was infinite and eternal? How did we see the divine's, how did we live in the divine's call for us? And how and where did we fall short? And so I see a lot of different answers to this in this chapter, just specifically in the ways that Pippin is able to tie into the larger world and to find hope in things that might be counterintuitive to anyone who is not going through this and who has not seen the way that things have worked out for the good in previous chapters. And so I hope that everyone who is thinking of their own pilgrimages will think of the ways that we have been refreshed in daily struggles, the ways that we have seen the hand of the divine in any form that we see it in our daily lives, and how did we live into what it calls us to do.
And think of your life as a pilgrimage. You don't have to mm-hmm. go on a specific one. Your whole life can be viewed that way. And those are really great things to ponder. Please put that on the Facebook page.
I will.
Great. And I think we are done. Thank you.
I think so. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you all for spending this time with us.
And in the meantime, may Elbereth protect you. Be of good hope. Namarie.
Namarie.